Nick Drager is with the World Health Organization, former director of the Department of Ethics, Equity, Trade, and Human Rights. He's also a professor of practice with the McGill World Platform for Health and Economic Convergence at McGill, and has worked a great deal on ways in which public health can improve health outcomes, and has also been involved in health training at high levels internationally. So welcome, Nick.
Thanks very much. Actually, I've retired from WHO, and now I'm here at McGill, so I'm very happy to be here. Thanks very much, and thanks very much for having me. I'm going to just briefly talk about trying to move research and development and innovative financing to diseases of the poor, particularly where there's no market. And basically stay at global level, like John did a little bit, and then we'll look to Prashant to take it back down to the community level, where the action really is. But at global level, we try to sort of get the shape that policy environment to, in fact, help the local level in terms of enable it to do its action. And I'm going to look at this from a global health diplomacy perspective, that is, how we got this issue on the global agenda and how we moved the negotiation process between governments, civil society, the private sector, to get consensus to agree on a global regime that had good public health outcomes. In fact, that moves research and development to produce the drugs, the vaccines, and the medical devices for diseases of the poor. And as I go through this in a couple of minutes, perhaps you can think about your issue and the issue we're talking about, social business, and John was saying how we can get it on the G8 agenda. It would be also, I think, fairly good to get it on the WHO health agenda in its governance because I personally believe in this area. I personally believe business is part of the solutions for these issues, particularly the kind of business that you're talking about. And if we can get it into the governance, mainstream governance agenda of a WHO, I think it would have a lot of traction and would move some of this stuff to move to target health as an outcome of some of the work that you're doing, and I think that's what many of you have expressed today. So how do we do it? Well, basically, we had a director general who believed in this issue, and as WHO usually does for difficult issues, started a commission. We asked Ruth Dreyfus, who was president of Switzerland at that time, to head a commission on innovation, intellectual property, and public health, and to focus on the cycle of discovery, development, and delivery, and look in that whole area how we can incentivize the system to move that research and development to continue the Viagras of the world, but also to produce dengue vaccines. I mean, we try to, this win-win situation. We've had a couple of commissions in the past. Jeffrey Sachs had his first commission on macroeconomics health. He showed that whole nice connection between health and growth and made a very good case to invest in health. That never went through our governance system, and it stayed as a report, and we really never acted upon it as I think we probably should. Michael Marmot, who you have coming tonight, has just finished his commission on social determinants. Michael's work, excellent work, it also hasn't gone through the governance system yet in WHO. And to get traction, we're going to have to figure out how we move that through. This one, after the report was produced, member states said, we like it. We as a member state, and what they usually do is say, good report, Secretariat, note it, and go ahead and do your work. Or they can say, Secretariat of WHO, establish a strategy for this. That's good, but there's not a lot of ownership when member states give it to an international secretariat. In this case, member states said, wait a minute, this is an important issue for us, we want to negotiate ourselves. So we want to set up an intergovernmental process, a negotiation process, like they are doing for climate change now, for other ones. But we want to establish a global strategy, as you see here, and a plan of action for public health. And so they said, we're going to spend some time, a couple of years, trying to understand these issues, trying to get our national constituencies to understand these issues and really bring it to global level and start negotiating a regime, in this case a strategy, which is not a treaty or anything, but it's harder than just a resolution. So in that panoply of instruments that you have from soft to hard at global health level, a resolution is very soft. A treaty like the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control or International Health Regulations is hard. This is sort of in between. This is a negotiated strategy, which still has obligations and responsibilities on member states. So we went for 3 years really negotiating this, and just having it on the negotiating table started countries to understand these issues. And it was really just having these issues at global level being negotiated. You got to go back to your constituencies. You have to have ministries across looking at these issues. And it creates buy-in. Even if you don't eventually get a regime, at least the negotiation process does it. And it's something you might want to consider here too. Even just launching these global negotiations on these issues gives buy-in to the process. So we had 192 member states plus the private sector deal with and civil society deal with these very contentious issues like intellectual property, which was a very contentious issue and still remains with a lot of polarized positions on this. As typical with international negotiations, late into the night, very heavy negotiations at the end, trade-offs, but we got a regime. We got a global strategy. We got an action plan. Here you see the eight elements, and if anybody's interested in the global strategy, it's online. And it's online. I can give people the reference. The important one for this group here is the seventh element, promoting sustainable financing mechanisms. It's all important, and they all weave together. But the key one is that. And what that called for, there was a group of African countries who wanted in this negotiation a global fund set up for research and development for diseases of the poor. People weren't really in the mood for global funds anymore. There's enough of them being established. And so the compromise situation was, let's establish an expert group, as the compromise situations usually are at global level, and let's look into innovative financing mechanisms for diseases of the poor and see if we can come up with either current ones and scale them up, or at least have a good analysis of what's going on and maybe have some new ones. And that's what we're into now. We have an expert group set up at WHO on looking at innovative financing disease of the poor. I think some of the top experts in the world. We had a first meeting last in July, I think it was, and next one coming up next week. We have about 90 proposals on the table. There was a public call for proposals of innovative financing. There's a number of criteria that are being set up to analyze these proposals and, again, to analyze them for policymakers who can make a choice. And these proposals range from the sort of push mechanisms of more R&D funds on the public side all the way to these pull mechanisms of advanced purchase agreements, of prize funds. There's even a call for a research and development treaty. More negotiations, but a strong call from developing countries for that. So there's lots of mechanisms. So, again, I think the kind of lessons to be learned here in terms of putting an issue that's not normally in health. I mean, intellectual property, usually WTO, WIPO, doesn't come to WHO, but countries wanted it in WHO. All these areas of innovative financing in WHO in a health forum. And health people, of course, bring in their intellectual property people, your industry people, your foreign affairs people to the World Health Assembly. When you look around, the negotiations weren't at all health negotiations. They were trade negotiations. They were finance negotiations. But the forum was a good one. And maybe, again, in social business, as we move forward in this area, and there's a need, and again, John said the same thing, you might not want to move at global level at this point, but when you're ready to move in this kind of way, think about these kind of lessons in terms of, and the kind of forum that you would want to place this in. I mean, it's traditionally in the bank and traditionally in places like OECD, but you might want a different forum, particularly if you're looking for a social goal in this area. So I tried to present a little bit about trying to move R&D funding to diseases of the poor, how we got it on the global agenda, how we got consensus among 192 countries, and what kind of lessons we could perhaps learn for the issues that we're talking about today. Thank you.
Okay, so we're... Okay, we have time for two questions for Nick. Okay.
The profit motive is extremely important in the private sector. So my question is, why haven't the private sector tried to create solutions for these kinds of diseases? And if there is a problem with that, why would this approach succeed? Because I believe private sector mechanisms whereby both the parties are making, are you know, going to benefit is much more powerful than trying to get the bureaucrats and the administrators and the governments of the world to unite into doing something like this.
Should we ask the two questions and you'll answer them at the same time?
Yes, my question is for Professor Curtin. You talk about the recent roles of the G8 and the G20, but never about the G7. Is that because it's not possible to structure anything today without the Russia?
We'll let Nick respond since he has to leave.
You can skip Russia.
I'll let that one. Leave that one for John. Thanks for that question. That's a great question. I mean, that's what the private sector says. We have the solutions, and it's business as usual, and we will get there. But we're talking about where there's no market. And the usual business solutions where there's no market, traditional IP is good where there's a market, but it doesn't seem to work here. Tiered pricing, yes, that's another solution that they're proposing. It doesn't work all the time, in terms, potentially for R&D. It works a bit for access. What we're saying is we're not trying to, as bureaucrats at a global level, try to design a regime. We're trying to say to design a regime that's going to incentivize the system to give the kind of new incentives for business to actually move into this area. Now, one of the themes of this workshop is harnessing business better in global health diplomacy. How can we better engage business in a constructive way? And one of the things we learned about for these 3 years of negotiation of business is that it affects business a lot. Business, it's very important for business to be engaged in this. Business is part of the solution, but yet they didn't have a seat at the negotiating table. The negotiations were traditional government-to-government negotiations. Business was around the outside of the negotiations, trying to influence the process through delegations. They didn't have a seat. Can we think of more constructive ways in terms of looking at future global negotiations and global health negotiations where we can better harness business in this kind of global health diplomacy so that the innovative solutions come from business as well as being sort of looked at from fora from outside?
Can I follow Thank you.
If I were able to design a mechanism which would allow the private sector to be interested in doing it with nobody in the way in terms of the local officials, the corruption, the bureaucracy, and all that aside, so that the people who need prevention of malaria and so on can get the help that they can afford, would that be a better solution?
I mean, we're interested in public health outcomes. We're interested in the outcome. If you can show us mechanisms that give the kind of drugs, vaccines, and medical devices and care, if you want to take it to services outside of products, doesn't matter where the solution comes from.
I mean, absolutely. If it comes from an academic institution that thinks this is a new way of looking at research and development, and we can drive research and development to produce these things, I think that's what we're looking for. We're looking for outcomes, and I don't think you're worried about how those outcomes are going on. And I think we've had some very good, in fact, proposals from business in these innovative financing mechanisms. Thank
you.
Have one more presenter, so we need to just do that first, and then we can.